You're listening to Para X.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Coming to you live from planet Earth's real Gotham City. My name is Ra, and I'm here to awaken the dormant particles spiraling inside your DNA. So come with me as we go further down the mystical spiral of life. Spiral Radio, where each and every week we unveil the different shades of you and the different shades of me until we all vibrate the same frequency. Welcome, everybody. We're here at Spiral Radio. It's a black full moon. The full moon is in Pisces, I believe. And I think it's about to transfer to Aries, I think. Maybe. I think that's what it is. We got a great guest. We want to just get right down to it because we only got an hour tonight. And even though Spiral Radio, we experienced a loss in our family, we're still, the show must go on. And we're going to have a great and knowledgeable night with a little bit of fun. All right, my guest, everybody, is the great, the one and only, the magnanimous Peter Moon. Primarily, he's known for his research in space-time projects. He is basically an expert on Eastern religions and Western occultism. And everybody, for when I use the word occultism, some people tend to think it's the wrong kind of word. They think it's evil or something. It only means mysterious, hidden, secret, you know. It's a good word. It's not what it means to everybody. His unique career involves Scientology, the Montauk Project, the Romanian Hall of Records, time travel. It goes on and on. I can introduce him all night. But let's just get down to it. You know, I've been into his research for a long time. This is Peter Moon, everybody. Welcome, Peter, Spiral Radio. It's nice to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for the complimentary introduction. It's very nice to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you agreed, and we're going to have, and you know, and if it works out with you, maybe there's just so much that I wanted to talk to you about that if it works out good, maybe we'll have you on for a series of shows. Like once in a while you pop in and we can go over more because it's too much to cram into an hour for you. You know, it's amazing. I mean, if you want to talk about what you've been, I know you just came home from Romania recently, if you want to maybe talk about that, or do you want me to just start off with some questions for you? You might want to give people a little brief.
If you want to go, is fine.
Well, you know, if you want to let everybody know, like, who you are, and if they're clueless and not, if they haven't heard of you before, and, you know, or they're just unaware of who you are, but usually if you're in the paranormal field, you've heard of Peter Moon by now. And so maybe if you want to give them like a brief little summary of, you know, who you are.
Yes, I came to notoriety in 1992 when I ghost wrote and published and edited the book, The Montauk Project Experiments in Time, with Preston Nichols, who was a scientist involved in time experiments, which went right hand in hand together with mind control experiments. And this work, and I wrote many sequels, some of them with Preston, to that work, was a lot of phenomena that was created as a result of investigating that project. And in 1998 or 99, I caught the eye of another time travel scientist, Dr. David Anderson, who had a time travel research center on Long Island. And I began to collaborate with him as early as 1999. And he eventually took me to Romania, where I had coincidentally published, had my book, The Montauk Project, published in Romania. And I also took some books from my publisher there, which have now been published in the English language, the Transylvania series, they're called, Transylvanian Sunrise being the first book, about a hall of records that was discovered by the Americans and the Romanians, who became partners around that time and began diplomatic relations for the first time. And Romania became a part of NATO, and it all started over this hall of records that was found beneath a structure in the mountains of Romania called the Romanian Sphinx. It looks like a sphinx.
Yeah. It's a rock.
And that is a brief synopsis of who I am and what I'm doing. I've recently put up a new website, timetraveleducationcenter.com, where anybody can go and opt in, log in, and they can get 7 free videos explaining the math and physics of time travel, demonstrating how time travel does not violate the laws of math or physics. Very simple to understand. You might have to watch it once or twice, or two or three times, but it's simple to understand.
Yeah, I did read it. It's basically, if you have any simple kind of education, you can basically get a hold of it. I mean, and you could grasp the basics of it. You're right. Now, how did you, for everybody too, my website, if you're just joining us, is themysticalspiral.com, and this is Peter Moon, and he's at timetraveleducationcenter.com. Now, Peter, how did you first get to know, everybody, if you're not familiar with the Montauk Project, he had mentioned the name Preston. He's talking of Preston Nichols. And how did you first get to know Preston and the whole Montauk situation? Like, how did you get involved with that?
I had friends who knew him, and I was at that time in the marketing business, the brochure business, and I was looking at this device called the Betar. It was a device that was for balancing the energy fields of the body. I was told that Preston had a machine that was more efficient and less expensive.
Reich technology?
No.
I'm sorry to cut you off. No?
It's not. And basically, Preston was actually the one who created the prototype for this other, I found out later on.
Wow, he is a genius, huh?
Yeah, and I went down to meet him at a public lecture in Farmingdale, Long Island. It was at the Long Island Psychotronics Association. And the Long Island chapter of the United States Psychotronics Association. And I listened to him lecture, and with a panel of other people who I got to know as well. And it was a small, relatively small group, but you heard some pretty far out things at this group. There was a lot of metaphysical groups on Long Island at that time. And this was probably the most revolutionary and far out and exotic of them all. And of course, I went back and learned as much as I could. I went back to those meetings for about 6 months before I decided to, forge a relationship with Preston Nichols, which he was agreeable to. There's a lot of back drama and story that I've included in the various books that I've written about that. But yeah, That's basically how I got to know Preston.
He's like a genius, but there's that fine line between genius and madman sometimes,
Well, that's the case with a lot of people.
Yeah.
Nikola Tesla was similarly,
Yeah.
Eccentric.
Yeah, I have a friend that's a good buddy of mine that I actually had on the show before. His name's Masaki, and he works with organite pyramids. And I got interested in that field as well. And that brings me to William Reich and Reich. Were they using Reich technology in Brookhaven at one point?
Well, as Preston would say about the Wilhelm Reich technology, and it's covered in the book, The Montauk Project, they were using Reich technology to influence the weather as early as the 40s.
Wow.
And this was the forerunner of what we now know as the HARP project. But, he says it fits, but it doesn't fit because and certainly I would say in the latter stages of the Montauk project, they were using Wilhelm Reich techniques to stimulate the psychic faculties of people and to get them to, use their minds to peer beyond the veil, so to speak, and in a very manipulative way, by the way. So yeah. You can't exclude Wilhelm Reich from the Montauk Project or from Preston Nichols.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. And for people that aren't familiar with the Montauk Project, everyone, it's a long story, but basically beneath Camp Hero, after the base went abandoned and they left it, Brookhaven Labs had to take their mind control experiments and all their research and everything they were doing, they had to take it underground.
Well, that's not exactly accurate, but basically Brookhaven Labs was where they picked up the technology from the Philadelphia experiment, and they moved it out to Montauk because of the radar transmitter they had out there, which would transmit at the window frequency to the human mind. This was at Camp Hero, located at Montauk Point, New York.
That's the SAGE radar?
Yes. And you can see a 6-minute synopsis video of the Montauk Project on the page, timetraveleducationcenter.com. You don't have to opt in or anything. You just click on the lower right gray or light brown box, whatever it is, and you can watch that 6-minute synopsis video of the Montauk Project.
Now, I don't think that they picked this, and I know you know for sure that they didn't pick Montauk Point because it was just secluded and underground and private. I mean, this is Native American land, really mystical area, and they had pyramids, like Egyptian pyramids maybe even there at one time?
I don't know if you would call them Egyptian per se, because the Egyptians are usually identified with step pyramids or something like the Great Pyramid. And these pyramids looked more like mounds. They were pyramids. They were referred to as pyramids. And there were at least three of them at one time. And we don't know the exact location. There were probably different locations with multiple pyramids. But there was a hurricane in 1938, a huge hurricane, that was said to have wiped them out.
So they were there as recently as 1938?
Yes. There's five pictures of the early part of the century in the book Pyramids of Montauk, which spurred a whole book when I discovered there were pyramids out there. And it, eventually got me a connection with the Montauk shaman and the Montauk medicine man, who became a very critical part of my evolutionary development and my life. He's still a very good friend, Artie Crippen, as is the Montauk shaman, Sharon Jackson.
This is amazing. A lot of synchronization here, because I know that this Montauk Indians, they had some kind of connection to Egypt in some way, because they're calling, their chiefs, they're like a pharaoh or a fowler, right?
Their family name were the pharaohs, and then it was transliterated into fowler. Fowler would be pronounced fowler. Fowler.
Yeah.
Dutch fowler, pharaoh. So they became known as the Fowlers. So you see a lot of Montauk Indians that are Fowlers, but they're also Pharaohs. The two names were considered to be synonymous. Go ahead.
I think the synchronization is way more than that, and involves you as well, because I think somehow giants were involved with this, and maybe the Native Americans had a to fight them off at one time. And I think that they're also involved with your in the Bushegi Mountains. And I think that I want to go back maybe to your childhood for a moment and think that maybe somehow that you were this was meant to for you to be involved with all these certain things in life, because in all the research and all the projects and all the things you've could have got involved in, I think that somehow this is linked in to what's going on with you in Romania, and somehow it's all, you know, some kind of loop for you, and then maybe like before your birth that you were almost meant to do all this stuff, you know, and get involved with all this, that it's some kind of cosmic alignment for you or some kind of something that it's too much. It's more into it.
There's a lot of synchronicity. You're correct. There is a lot of destiny involved and being aware of one's destiny. What I would tell you is, of course, when I was involved in Scientology, and that was sort of a diversion and a kind of an extension and kind of a diversion from the path I chose as a teenager, was to pursue higher knowledge and human potential. And, you know, Scientology sort of cropped up and not only got in the way, provided a way, because it was the most, I guess, comprehensive system that addressed things in a way that other systems did not address. And so I explored that and was involved in that movement from 1971 through 1983. That was 12 years of my life, and it was a very time well spent for me.
I wonder if that 12 years means something too, like the number 12, that it happened to be that 12 years. It's a pretty mystical number as well.
When you peel it down and look at it in terms of natural cycles, and this is what I'm getting back to of natural cycles, is that that was like I left Scientology and their organization known as the Sea Organization right at the age of 30. And this was right after what is called in astrology your Saturn return. After Saturn's gone around the sun, it takes about 29 and a half years. And that is when you actually reach your full maturity. It's not when you're 18 or 21. Yeah. In an old society, you would have started learning an apprenticeship around 14, more or less. And you would have apprenticed, worked for the master craftsman. And by the time you reach 30, you're at least, you know, a journeyman or a master of your craft. I don't really know how they had it. But so you're now a fully mature professional in the old apprentice system that they used to have. And so when you reach 30, like at that point, I got married when I was like 29 and a half. Almost 30, and then I found my way out of that. That was all my life training. And then I ended up moving to Long Island right before the Montauk Project culminated, not knowing anything about the Montauk Project. But it culminated in August of 83. I moved to Long Island in July of 83. But at the end of July 83. But what I was going to say is that when after I departed Scientology, I eventually, when I discovered the depths of the roots of L. Ron Hubbard and occultism and the work of Aleister Crowley, I began to study that very deeply, because I said, if he knew all this, I wanted to know what he knew. So therefore, when you study magic, and magic is a very misunderstood subject, and it's a very diabolical subject. It's a very diabolical subject because it's flip. You know, people will flip when they study it. But
It's enchantment. And I don't know if you I don't mean to cut you off, but I don't even know if you know of my family and how I grew up. I'm a hereditary Strega from Italy, and it's on both sides of my family. Are you familiar with the word Strega?
Oh, yes, but I've never, ever, 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 ever heard a male refer to themselves as a Strega.
Well, it's Stregone, but I use the male term would be Stregone, but we tend to use the word Strega, it's a generalize it. But yeah, technically it would be Stregone.
Okay, but in any case, yes, I am familiar with the Strega. But in any case, the magic, when you get down to the core of it, it's all about nature. It's not a bunch of hocus pocus. And it's going into alignment with one's true nature. So yes. When you...
It's the old ways.
When you open up to nature, you are attempting to find your identity and your relationship with nature. Now, to the degree that you can do that, your life will become imbibed with the apparency of magic, which will manifest through synchronicity. This is akin, it's really the same thing as the underlying principle of nature, which the Chinese refer to as the Tao.
Yes.
And the Tao is the ultimate concept of nature, the nature behind nature. So when synchronicity is the precursor to the Tao. So when you seek out nature, you will, it doesn't matter when you were born, who you were, the more you sort of get on that train, the more you will find it and manifest it. And if you go to my second book, Montauk Revisited, Adventures in Synchronicity, I have a quote referring to the Tao as the mystery behind all mysteries. Because here I was, you know, having all these mysteries of synchronicity popping left, right, and center. But this is something that I had been cultivating for my whole adult life. But it was sort of doing it in the background, not really advertising. Yeah. And that's the best way to do it. So then it ends up manifesting as a writing endeavor, a writing career, and this, that, and the other thing. And of course, it becomes progressively interesting. But in more recent times, I'm trying to get closer to that. And the medicine man introduced me to Qigong, which is something I practice daily, and spend quite a bit of time practicing it.
I had a there's questions in the chat room, but I didn't want to get off the topic real yet. Now it was funny because some of my ancestors Aleister Crowley had came to Italy in the 20s, and he was with some of the Strega, and you know, he was interested in, you know, the horned god and sexual rituals and evoking the horned god and Pan, and he was doing murals, and then he got thrown out of there, and they whitewashed all the murals that he did. Now, do you think that Hubbard, L. Ron Hubbard, was continuing some of the Golden Dawn in his work?
No, I don't think Hubbard was not into Enochian magic. He played around with it with Jack Parsons.
Yeah,
but Hubbard was just not into that. It's not what he was doing. I don't know how much of it he understood. I don't know how much of it he dispensed with or regarded. I know he regarded Aleister Crowley highly, and he regarded Jack Parsons with a considerable amount of regard. But back to Aleister Crowley, I have read that he is to this day recognized and revered on the island of Sicily as he's thought of as a poet, not a magician.
Yeah.
And he did retain some sort of historical authenticity as a poet. But I want to ask you a question about the Strega. I have encountered, not in a long time, but I used to go out to Camp Hero, and I would find these strange assortment of charcoal that had been burned laying on the grass. The grass was not burned underneath it. It would be all sort of clumped together as if one had had a campfire. But I think, you know, if you had a campfire with charcoal, it would have burned the grass beneath it. And there would be there would be a clump here, a clump maybe 20 yards away, a little more into the forest, and then one even more into the forest. And so it looked to me as if somebody, I mean, there's a lot of people fooling around out there, but I found this with enough consistency that I began to wonder. It looked as if somebody had burned some charcoal and then placed it in a circle, more like a pile, but, you know, it was flat, in three different locations. And it was first pointed out to me by a Straga that it was a Straga, that it was a Stragan stuff, but they didn't really know anything much more about that. And I wondered if you'd ever heard of anything like that.
Well, there's different lines of Straga, and if it was a Tanaric Straga, then he could have been aligning those with stars. Mm-hmm. Did anybody, because those are called the Star Witches, did you notice, like, was there any alignment with the stars when you looked up? Any?
Well, it was daytime, so I wouldn't know. And I mean, I wouldn't know what to reference them. It would depend where you looked at them from to see where they aligned with stars. There would have to be an initial reference point. They could well have aligned with stars. I really don't know. But it's an interesting concept. I haven't seen this out there for a long time. But then again, I don't go out there that much anymore. So it's one thought. That's all. I just thought I'd ask you.
Yeah, no, we could talk more about that another time as well. Do you want me to get to? There's a few questions that goes back to what we were talking from
Go
before.
Ahead.
And then, you know, we have 4 minutes till break, and then we come back. We'll get back into what we were talking. He's asked about the dangers. Oh, it goes. Now they just put something else and knocked me out. Okay, here it goes. Please ask about the dangers of discharge of Anderson's time reactor. He's wondering if Anderson may have traveled in time and was responsible for the discharge from time reactor, now found in the Kikalavina cave in Romania. Exotic materials have been found in the cave and blah, blah,
right.
blah.
Right. Well, that what he's asking about is a time reactor discharge that David Anderson said there was evidence of a time reactor discharge in Chocolavina Cave in Transylvania, where I recently just was. And that discharge was, according to their calculations, sometime between 200 and 2,000 years ago. No, well, David Anderson did not effect a discharge in that cave. He did not claim to have effected a discharge. He said that's where they found evidence of a discharge. If there was indeed a discharge in that cave, the implication from all of the research I've done is that it was done by some sort of mysterious / ancient civilization, which is featured in the book, or more alluded to than featured, in the secret parchment, where there is golden tunnels under there, and there's hieroglyphics that indicate that this was, you know, sort of the center of time where the worlds unite. So this is the discharge. David Anderson's we don't have any knowledge or claims of a discharge by Dr. Anderson's time reactor that has wreaked havoc. In fact, he says that the discharge of a time reactor can be harnessed into very inexpensive energy, relatively free energy.
And where would that discharge go?
Where would it go?
Yeah, he says, what's the dangers of the discharge from the time reactor? Where would the discharge go? Where would it end up? Then?
Well, I really couldn't answer that question because I'm not privy to the, you know, exact mechanics. But it's how do you harness and, you know, control energy? It's just like a big turbine or a waterfall. I mean, you know, you could, you know, you put it into a condenser and you store it. There is, if you look at the time travel theory explained number 8, it shows the patent. It shows that there is a storage for the energy, like storing a battery, so to speak. So it can be stored. It doesn't have to explode like an atom bomb.
Cool. We got about 30 seconds till we take our break. And I wanted to also, Peter, too, I was just thinking that you know how, you know, Egypt calls the moon goddess Isis. we Striga call her Diana, but there's also a more ancient name. Her name is Unia or Uni. There might have been a prayer to Uni. I got to look it up in one of my books, but it might have been an evocation or a prayer to Uni, because she has to deal with three stones or three rocks. So I got to look it up. But we're going to go to break now. We'll get right back in it, everybody. Peter Moon is at TimeTravelEducationCenter.com, and me, Ra, I'm at TheMysticalSpiral.com. This is Analog Driver, and the song is called Jail Card. Spiral out.
My disguise to you would seem as happy as controllers to say.
You must like
Jeffrey.
Draw my mind to the page. I'll take this draw because I'm gonna get stuck.
For everything paranormal, Para X.
And we're back. This is Ra from TheMysticalSpiral.com, and it's a full moon outside, and we are with the great one and only Peter Moon at TimeTravelEducationCenter.com. And that song was called Jail Card by the great Analog Driver. You can find them on Reverb Nation. Now, to get right back into it, because a half hour goes quick, I just wanted some people in the chat room were requesting more on Montauk Project, other about the cave, that cave should be remote viewed. And has anybody tried remote viewing that cave? Let me see now.
I haven't spoken to anybody with regard to who's tried to remote view, but what I just completed a newsletter, which actually I came to the conclusion, after kind of comparing what I experienced there to what's in the Montauk Project, is I deduced that there is a source of white noise near the cave, and that cave, that source of white noise would be related to not only the when the time reactor discharged, but the time phenomena in and around the cave. And there was a whole series of experiences that happened there, which are kind of too complicated to go in now. But it had to do with a young man being electrocuted, and he had a tattoo of the Mayan center of the galaxy, which represents the center of the galaxy represents the center of time and white noise, if you go back to the Montauk Project. So I would believe that the cave, and if one were to take a radio direction finder there with the proper type of radio direction finder, you would find a source of white noise either in or around the cave, probably would be deeply within it and probably hard to access.
And these ancient stones, you know, these ancient stones and everything, I mean, I think they accumulate energy and accumulate some kind of, you know, power, you know, even like the Blarney Stone or, you know, the stone in Mecca. I think after all this time of people worshiping it, even the Bushegi Sphinx, you know, I think over time it accumulates some kind of mysterious energy and power of its own. Do you agree?
Well, that's, you know, that idea has been out there, you know, since the beginning of time. The power of stones communication with stones. The Shinto religion includes that concept. Yes, it's certainly not new to mankind.
Yeah, I mean, and with the Montauk Project, I was wondering, and you know how they say that 97% of our DNA is just junk and dormant, and I don't think so. I know, in fact, that lying dormant in our DNA is our true abilities, our real, you know, stuff that we need to activate. And it's
the idea of junk DNA has been completely dispelled. And
yeah,
what is it? I think the man's name is Bruce Lipton. And you can watch his stuff, and he explains that, you know, this junk DNA concept is junk. It's not understood.
And these ancient symbols can help activate what's laying dormant in our DNA. And in Montauk, do you think, now I believe, and even Astrega, we believe that the DNA, you know, you don't just inherit like your dad's nose, like a physical trait. You can also inherit trauma and inherit experiences and traits like that, and also achievements that someone's had. So maybe was Montauk interested in some kind of DNA experiments to see if people can inherit traits, like inherit trauma? They're shattering the mind, and they're seeing that down the line, if these relatives, are you inheriting this trauma that you caused? You think that was part of it as well?
I don't think that they were working on inheritance so much, but what I would tell you is that the DNA of the people involved in the Montauk Project, some of the main players, was very much tied to, I don't quite know the way to put this, but would be tied to the DNA of the Christ / Antichrist. Not that the DNA of that is not very far afield, one from the other.
Now, this is, you think, Enki's DNA or whatever you want to call it?
No. I don't subscribe to Enki. But in any case, what I'm referring to, and you see that the main characters in and around the Montauk Project are the Cameron clan.
Yeah.
The Cameron clan, and it took me a while to learn that the name Cameron came from Amran, where the CH is silent, just like if you say Hanukkah. They spell Hanukkah with a CH, where Cameron can be Amran. And Amran is the name in the Quran of Mary, the mother of Jesus. Amran. Now, or also transliterated to Amman. So you have her of the tribe of Ben Amman, meaning the son of Amman, as in Amon Ra. Amon Benjamin.
Amon. And it's funny that in church they say Amen, Amman. They're saying it right there, right in church.
Well, exactly. And so, but getting more to the point of what you asked is that you have the DNA of, say, the family of Amran, which ties to the DNA of the Christ, and also the concept of the virgin birth. But writing right along that, because when you get into the rituals of magic, you have the creation of a moon child. And that is the whole purpose of the magical rituals of Aleister Crowley, is to create a moon child. And of course, more often than not, when that moon child, and Christ is the completely spitting image of a moon child. He was even referred to as the healing moon man in ancient history. But more often than not, you have an aborted thing. So it turns into an aborted thing, which would be more like an antichrist. So you have this certain type of DNA thread, which manifests through certain clans, such as the Camerons, such as the Wilsons, such as the Greens, such as the Kellys, to name a few. And anybody who's, you know, cross-pollinated with those particular lines, and I don't mean to suggest those are the only lines. Those are
Celtic too, right? That's Celtic magic as well. That's Celtic lines too in that, right? Kellys, Celtic.
Well, yes, and those all go back to Egyptian as well. And you can also trace them back to Romania as well.
But Persia maybe as well, you think?
Well, yes, everything.
Yes.
But the point I'm saying is, so when you get into the DNA, you see many types of, you call them explosions, you can call them iterations, you can call them maverick roulette wheels trying to create a spectacular being. And really, this can also be likened to what's called the 24th gene pair, the separation of the 23 gene pairs into 24. Theoretically, we had 24 and they were jammed into 23 and we became less paranormal, less clairvoyant, more stupid.
And so basically,
a fully functional creature with 24 gene pairs, all of his skull activated, with it like the idea of Golgotha, meaning the place of the skull is like the crystal skull. You have a fully activated human being, fully activated consciousness, and this is what DNA is aspiring to when it's indeed aspiring and not on an opposite path from that.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just wondering, when you say crystal skull, if you've ever tried bringing a crystal skull out to the Bushegi Mountains or to Montauk.
No, I don't advocate people fooling around with those things. I just don't advocate it. People are playing around with things.
I hear you.
I don't, you know, it's like they're playing around.
Montauk, to begin with, do you think that we're not even supposed to be out there? Like, it was meant to be Native American land. And these people, I mean, it's not meant. So I think an ominous spiritual, you know, vortex being created there somehow, because it's, you know, we ruined that land. It was not meant for what's going on there, you know?
Well, what you have out there is you have people with second, third, or fourth homes in areas of that, and it is obscene wealth. Then these people don't even occupy the homes. They're beautiful homes, and they have no idea. They have no idea of what any of this means. It's not malicious, but it's excess money, and it's just the way the world is. So the older families are being moved out. Now, the older families were never considered, I guess what you'd say, allied to my cause. But they're, you know, we could almost be nostalgic for each other now, because, you know, they were not going to help me or Preston Nichols because they were hiding the project. But as they're being moved out by the new breed, the nouveau rich, it's almost like, wow, they might appreciate me more than they did. But anyway, yes, they're being moved out. And of course, they were imposters on the land themselves. But so, no, it's very much not in the right hands. You're correct.
Yeah, exactly. So there's just probably an ominous feel right when, as you step on I haven't been there since I'm a kid. I went there as with my family just for like a vacation spot for the weekend. I'm from like the Bronx area, Westchester County. So we went out there once when I was younger, but I heard the stories later. But yeah, I mean, with Montauk, I mean, I have, and what do we got? We got 15 minutes left. So that's why, Peter, I would love to have you back on another time as well, because there's just so much to get into. I mean, I didn't even get into the Bushegi Mountains, really. And I have so I could do a whole show just questioning you about Scientology alone. I have a lot of stuff I wanted to ask, and I've had visions about L. Ron Hubbard since I was a little that I wanted to share with you as well. But for Montauk, I'm really interested in the Montauk Chair. Are you familiar with a lot of, you know, the breakdown of what that consists of?
The Montauk Chair was basically a lounge chair that had a person in it, and the person was attached to him various receivers. It was like so he could amplify what was in his energy field, and he could think things and project them out the transmitter.
So this is what can basically, like with the Buddhist and Tibetan, call a tulpa. Can it create something like manifest, like a, like they say it even manifested the beast, like some kind of Bigfoot type being?
Well, that's what supposedly did indeed happen. And it yes, because you're just amping up somebody's projection.
Are you friendly with Duncan Cameron? And what happened to Duncan Cameron?
Well, I haven't heard about him. Cameron, I saw him about a year ago. He is basically fine, living his life out on the south shore of Long Island, where he lives, and going about his business. Sometimes he'll occasionally lecture on Montauk. He kind of has announced that he's not going to have anything to do with it. Then he'll come out and lecture about it now and then. But he's, you know, he's just, you know, I don't know that he's ever completely going to come to terms with all of it. I really can't speak for him in that regards, but he's basically still around. He's a very gifted individual, and I guess he suffered a lot and was very much involved in a lot of that, you know, stuff that went on out there.
So is he the psychic that created this tulpa, this beast?
Well, according to the story, yes, he is. According to the story.
So that as soon as the Sage radar was cut, the power was cut, then the beast would dematerialize, or that would remain?
This is the story we have. You know, we don't really know what happened. This is the story. And
I really think that the Montauk somehow is tied into the Bushegi Mountains as well. That area, I feel that's not a coincidence. I feel there's something to do with those two areas together.
Well, what we do know is that the publication of the Montauk Project in Romania caught the eye of the author who shared his story, and he sent it to the publishing house in Romania that published my book. And that he started his publishing company on the Montauk Project. It's now become a very successful publishing company. And he published this book about the Buchej Mountains. It's called Transylvania Sunrise in English. And yeah, that's Montauk was what sort of connected the dot, so to speak, connected me to my Romanian counterpart. And the connection to Romania is very deep. At the same time, it's very ephemeral because, you know, I might spend a couple weeks in Romania a year, and how much can you really accomplish in 2 weeks? You know, and how many people can you meet, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, the future might hold some very interesting things in this regard, but yes. And of course, we can't dismiss the connection between the two, although the Romanian scenario seems to be on a higher harmonic than everything that was going on with Montauk.
And it's a shame because, you know, at least in Romania, you have that deep lore that goes back generations and generations, and they have ancient monuments. We don't have that in America. We all came here. You know, we have the Native Americans who have their monuments in there, but we don't have that. You know, we don't have that deep tradition, unfortunately, like somewhere like Romania does, you know.
America is, you know, an occupied country.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, it is an occupation, and it treats the Native Americans accordingly. And it's not very pleasant for them.
So basically you found, I know it's only 10 minutes late, it's crazy to get into it now, but there was a hall of records found in Romania with the holograms.
That's the whole premise of the book, Transylvania Sunrise by Radu Sinemar, where it talks about underneath the Sphinx, they opened a chamber which was 50,000 years old, but the technology was more modern than anything we would have, and it included holographic projections, a hall of records, you can call it, where it included the history of the Earth.
Back like an Akashic record, right?
It wasn't an Akashic record. It was a record. I mean, I don't know. You wouldn't call it Akashic, so to speak.
Yeah.
How it might relate, but anyway, it would project out the history of the world if you were to watch it.
Like an eternal Earth memory.
Something like that. Yes. And that's what you're talking about with the Hall of Records. Now, in the third book of the series, Mystery of Egypt, they go underneath through a tunnel to the Giza Plateau, where they find a somewhat similar installation, but this one has archives, deep archives of the history of the Earth, and there's something like in slate, and they will project out holographic histories. And the only way, and they said that they brought these back to the United States, as many as they could fit, for evaluation. And I once had the idea, well, what do they have? A bunch of guys on loan from the CIA and the FBI to watch all these things and report on them? I said, no, this does not work. Then I heard about this huge computer they have in Utah, in what is it called? Giant Mountain, whatever it's called. And this is a mega computer, and this is the only computer that, if they could figure out a way, which I'm sure they could have, to download those records, this computer could then process the data. And the other thing, it would indeed, because they, according to that book, they do have holographic computers in the Pentagon. So I can't imagine that they wouldn't have one out there. I call it Giant Rock, but that's not the name. Granite Mountain is what it's called. Granite Mountain in Utah. It's a Mormon center.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
The whole point of this is it is my intuition that tells me if they did take these discs back to evaluate them, that there is a Trojan horse in them that would sort of backfire on the potential misuse of the data. That's just my intuition, so speaking. But anyway, that's a little bit about the Hall of Records and what might have ensued from there, according to the book. I don't really have an update beyond that.
Wow, we got we got like 7 minutes left. So I wanted to also ask you about, when you were younger, did you also like have maybe encounters with the spiritual realm as a kid, or maybe see spirits, or have some, you know, you explored more than just your five senses at a young age and then maybe lost it?
Not so much. I was pretty protected. I was very athletic. I was into sports.
Wow.
You know, I could tell you what teams won at what time.
So what got you in all to what was the folk? What was the change in your life? Where did that happen that made you go into the metaphysical?
I think that when I moved from one town to another, I moved to Davis, California, and I was sort of did not have the whole same group of friends, and sports culture around me. So I was kind of on my own and I was forced to read to occupy my time. And I began to read, and because I had a, I guess what you might call a acceleratable mind, that far more acceleratable than I would have considered, certainly at the time. Yes, I began to read and ask questions. So that changed my whole perspective, because I actually became very involved in reading science fiction and projected out from there, and became a very independent thinker. I was always an independent thinker, but then it went into the intellectual realm instead of just the, you know, chit-chat realm. So that's kind of how I got into this. And I talk about it in my book. I have a, you know, autobiographical book, the Montauk Book of the Dead, which explains how I got all into this, goes into my youth and whatnot.
That's a big book. That's the big book.
It's a big, thick book, yes. And yeah. It's actually in two parts. The second book is the Montauk Book of the Living, which is not autobiographical at all. It's about, that was the original book that I was going to write, but they sort of go together. Either of those, it's like I'm going to have to go through some of those books and extract some of the data and present them in video format, because there's so many nuggets of information in there. And that's a continuous trail of investigation, which even fascinates me when I go back to read it, because those books are close to 10 years old. So it's like when you write a book, wow, I wrote that. That's 10 years ago. You have to go back and read it yourself as if you're researching it yourself, not completely. And these threads never die. They go on and on and on. So I've been in this business for 25 years now. The Montauk Project Experiments in Time will have its silver anniversary this May, this coming
May.
Wow,
congratulations, man. It's amazing.
Yes, it's been around for 25 years. And, you know, the story, the legacy is not about to, you know, die. It's only become more interesting. And the Time Travel Education Center has the most recent work. I'm currently working on two books on that site. There's a third one that will be up there shortly. I mean, they're in progress. The books for the subscribed members. I have a free membership and a paid subscriber membership. And the paid subscribers can watch the books as they go up chapter by chapter and comment on them if they want, and get back to me and give me the feedback and whatnot. There's several videos on there, several podcasts. People are invited to go to the Time Travel Education Center, and I'm gonna be doing, you know, more work on it soon, including a new video series called The Psychology of Space-Time. We've got the Time Travel Theory Explained video series done, but now we're going to go to the psychology of space-time, because the problem is technology is here. What we do not have is the psychology commensurate with the technology. Yeah. The human beings aren't in a position where it's accessible to them. And that would be the next step, because we're in for a lot of dynamic change technologically in the coming years. And this technology is probably the most exotic of them all, because it changes everything.
Yeah, I think we're in for a lot of big changes coming up, and we only got about 1 minute left, so I want to remind everybody that we're at themysticalspiral.com. My name is Ra, and my great guest is called Peter Moon, the great Peter Moon, and he's at timetraveleducationcenter.com. There's a lot more I wanted to get to with you, Peter. I mean, I would love to have you back on another time if you'd like.
Sure, we can do that. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And I was wondering, too, we have about a minute left. I had an experience with ayahuasca in 2004. Have you ever encountered anything like that?
No, I don't do hallucinogenic drugs. I have done LSD when I was younger. I did it very spectacularly, but I don't do hallucinogenic drugs, and I do Qigong. And you can basically do anything you can do on hallucinogenic drugs with Qigong.
Yes.
But anyway, no, go ahead and share your experience if you have time.
No, it's not. We gotta go. Next time we will. But everybody, this was a great show. This is me, Ra, and this is, like always, the Great Spiral Radio, TMS, the Mystical Spiral, and this is the one and only Peter Moon. It's a full moon, everybody. Enjoy as we transfer from Pisces into Aries. Spiral out.
I want to hold you in.